Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
President Cyril Ramaphosa has announced a 156 billion rand investment in water and sanitation infrastructure over the next 3 years, describing water security as one of government's highest priorities. I'm assuming it's aside from stealing. Anyway, that's just an aside. The plan includes the launch of the National Water Access Acceleration Program, expanded use of boreholes, groundwater development, rainwater harvesting, and reforms aimed at holding municipalities accountable for failing water systems. The announcement comes as the communities across South Africa continue to experience recurring water shortages, aging infrastructure, and deteriorating service delivery. To help us understand and to see how serious this ambitious plan is and if it can make a meaningful difference, we're joined by Professor Anthony Turton. He's a scientist specializing in water resource management. Professor, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you are well.
Good morning to you, and thank you for having me, and good morning to the listeners.
So this is quite an ambitious plan. It makes me nervous when I hear such ambition ahead of local municipal elections, but let's put our cynicism aside. Is there a plan to read? Is there detail, or are these just broad statements?
Well, I'm on the record, I think, with your program in the past of constantly referring to inappropriate solutions applied to misdiagnosed problems.
Exactly.
And this is a classic example of that now. So you have an inappropriate solution in the fact that the assumption is that it's a shortage of capital, of cash. Therefore, just add loot, just add more money. Mm. Well, that's not about it at all, because the core problem, and I often refer to the root cause analysis, the root cause analysis, or the heart of the problem, is the inability of the existing municipalities to allocate the money that they have to appropriate actions. In other words, the operation and maintenance budgets that they already have, the scheduling of the changing out of pumps and the upgrading of infrastructure that they should have done over the last 30 years. That's the problem. The problem is the inability of the existing structures to deal with the money that they have. So just by adding more money is simply going to feed, in my humble opinion, in fact, in my professional opinion, it's going to feed the very, very rapidly growing water mafias that are now capturing the water tanker market and the pump market, the sewage pumping market, etc. You're going to probably see a burgeoning of these particular activities.
So in other words, what you're saying is money in some ways becomes an incentive to exacerbate the problem so that you could find solutions that are financially beneficial for whoever is the solution provider.
Yes, all of the work that I've done, and that includes work as an expert witness in court cases and stuff like that. It's all about the fact that what the business model is quite simple. You find a problem, you amplify the problem to the point where you turn it into an emergency. It has to become emergency, because then you can bypass the procurement rules. And what then happens is you now procure your buddy. You procure the people that you are politically connected with. So the bigger the crisis, the bigger the revenue. And that's why the inappropriate solution to a misdiagnosed problem is, in fact, the way that looting is taking place almost on an industrial scale. And it's also the way that, think of it as the grease gun that lubricates the patronage machine. Mm. So this is all money that's going to ultimately be allocated to patronage. In other words, it's buying votes for people that are going to get tenders, but it's not in any way going to make a positive impact on the citizens of the country. And therein lies the dilemma, because ultimately the longer that government continues with this kind of action, the more illegitimate they come, the more angry people become in the communities, and ultimately the stronger becomes the driving force to call for some form of regime change or a change in the voting configuration.
So I had we had a strange situation at home. We had a water leak in our driveway. We're in a complex, and I logged it immediately. But it took a while, and eventually they came, and they said, no, they can't look at it because I'd logged it, but I didn't put which unit number, which makes no sense because I've obviously logged it according to my account and what have you. But okay, I need to do it again, and then they'll come back. Logged it again, and I'd put this water leak. They came back and said, no, I've put a burst pipe or a water leak, but actually it's a leaking water meter, so I need to re-log it. I said, but how would I possibly know what the cause is? It's beyond my scope. I'm seeing water pouring down the driveway there, and then I had to re-log it. Now, this is the third time. It took about 2.5 months of this dance until they could come and replace the water meter, which was what it was. In the 2.5 months, this water just kept going. And there was nothing that I could do about it. No plumber would touch it because it was illegal for them to do so. And I thought to myself, here's just one example of one burst pipe or whatever it was. I didn't know what it was that took 2.5 months to fix. That you don't need a lot of money for that. You just need efficiency.
Yes. So what you are describing there now is a classic example of predatory behavior. So the civil servant is not there to solve your problems. In fact, the civil servant in what is now emerging as a mafia state, the civil servant has as a function converting problems into cash flow. So in other words, the bigger your problem, the more likely you are to either want to expedite it by greasing someone's hand with silver, in the hope that they will fast track the process. So the whole system is inherently corrupt, from top to bottom, which gets back to my central argument at the start of this interview. By applying a couple of billion rand or a couple of hundred billion rand to the problem, you're not going to fix the problem, because the problem is actually the system itself, the network of people that have to make decisions. And there's you just described one decision of thousands of decisions that have to be made.
Yes, but that's the point, is because if I experience that's happening everywhere.
Yes, so it's got to the point where, for example, there's such a low level of skills in the municipalities that the municipalities are actually unable to even write technical specification for tender documents. They actually outsource that now to consulting companies, but that poses a dilemma, because the consulting engineering company now, if they assist in drafting the tender specifications, then they get disqualified from tendering, for the process.
Oh,
they
my can't word! Of course, yes.
At the same time, so in other words, it's a systemic structural failure. And the more money you add to a systemic structural failure without dealing with that, it just simply hastens the demise. So, let's zoom out of this whole thing and let's understand what's going on. And what's going on at the highest level now, at strategic level of thinking now, what's going on is that the city of Johannesburg and other large metros, they all got the same problems, are rapidly becoming unstable to the point that they are unable to attract and hold capital, unable to attract capital coming in to create jobs. And of course, the important thing is land value. People that own property in those areas, the land value, the investment value of that asset holding of theirs is also diminishing. And this is now posing all kinds of crises now, say, in the city of Johannesburg, where you start seeing that the rated municipal value of a piece of land exceeds what the real market value is. And now you start getting into a very, very difficult place, very difficult set of problems to unwind. So, we're talking about water on the one hand, but we must never lose sight of the fact that because water is an economic enabler, and because water is the very foundation of security, water security, of life, but of economic security. Mm. It's the very foundation of investor confidence. So if you can't get that right, then you're going to continue to see a capital flight out of your large metros. And I think, for example, just of Port Elizabeth, that used to be the home of the automotive industry in South Africa. There you're seeing major collapse of water systems, and you're seeing a big industry, the motor car manufacturing industry, that's forced to make very harsh decisions about, do they disinvest from the economy, or do they relocate, or do they just get out of the country completely? So these are really, really tricky questions. And ultimately, what you've described as your water leak there is the same as a bakery, or people that break bread for every citizen, the people that produce food, the people that provide all the goods and services, the bankers, etc. They all experience that. So it's compounded upwards, and ultimately you've got to understand that problem as an economic development problem, and in fact as an existential risk to national security and social stability. And if you don't understand it in that context, then you just continue to throw money at this thing, and you're missing the point, and you are ultimately feeding the very mafias that are going to cannibalize the system, because you're incentivizing them to continue damaging the system. Because the more they can damage the system, the more they can sabotage the system, the bigger becomes their cash flow in perpetuity.
Yeah, it's so scary. Just a question for our listeners. If people are able to afford either a borehole or a JoJo tank, do you think that it is, how important on a scale of 0 to 10 is it for people, citizens, residents of the city of Johannesburg, to make sure that they have that facility, assuming that they can afford it?
Yes, I did a national roadshow for Investec Bank at one stage, going to see all their private clients, and we were advising them all to basically invest in off-channel storage. So in other words, backup storage. It's become a necessity, and particularly if you're living in a complex, because then it becomes more economically affordable, because it's a body corporate issue, not an individual citizen issue, and therefore your economics of scale start kicking in at body corporate level. So we did this roadshow, and we are strongly of the opinion, and when I say we, professional people working in that sector, are all of the opinion that water insecurity is escalating exponentially. So therefore, you're obliged at the end of the day, if you're a factory or if you're a homeowner, you're obliged to guarantee your own water security. So which then leads us to the borehole story. Borehole, people are often talking about boreholes, and the reality is that places like Johannesburg are generally geologically not really well suited to high yield boreholes. There are exceptions, but the general underlying basement granite in Johannesburg is generally not conducive to strong yielding boreholes, and those weaker boreholes, by virtue of the fact that they're weak, they also tend to be more prone to contamination, particularly by coli. E. coli. Yes, everyone talks about E. coli. E. coli is the threat of every citizen in South Africa now. So boreholes are probably not the best solution. But once again, appropriate solutions for appropriate problems. If there's a body corporate or a complex that has got a problem, then maybe it becomes more economically feasible for those people to run a borehole into their backup system.
Right. Makes sense, Professor Anthony Turton. Thank you for that. He is a Professor Anthony Turton trained scientist specializing in water resource management, talking to us about Ramaphosa's 156 billion rand water plan to solve South Africa's water crisis. How hopeful are you that that is a good solution?